Okay, now we're back to audio after that thrilling video that I had for you. Next topic is gas transport in the blood, and I would like you guys to go to page 847. It's a couple of kind of complicated drawings. I want you to take a minute or two and look at them. Just pause this for a second. Look at those drawings and see if you can understand what's going on. One set of drawings is what's taking place in the lungs, and the other set of drawings is what's taking place in the tissues. When we think about oxygen being carried in the blood, I mean, we learned this a long time ago, that most of the oxygen is carried by the hemoglobin molecule, which is part of the red blood cell. So that's your first bullet. Oxygen is carried in this way. So I want you to write attached to hemoglobin. When the oxygen is attached to the hemoglobin molecule, it's actually called oxyhemoglobin at that point. But there is a small percentage that's also just dissolved in the plasma, a very small per, I think it's 1 or 2%, very small amount. But there is some that just dissolves into the plasma itself. On the next page, carbon dioxide. First bullet, in plasma, it travels as the bicarbonate ion. It's a very big topic, especially in 201, 202. We're going to touch on it lightly. Bicarbonate ion is HCO3 with the negative sign. The HCO, they're all capitalized because they're all individual elements, hydrogen, carbon, oxygen, and of course there's three oxygens there, and it's an ion, it's a negative ion. So the majority of your blood travels that way. Okay, second bullet, 20 to 30% carbon dioxide is bound to hemoglobin. Once the oxygen's been dropped off, CO2 can bind to hemoglobin for the trip back to the lungs, actually. Now you have to look really carefully at this picture about what happens at bicarbonate ion in the lungs. But if you read along with me, at the capillaries of the lungs, the bicarbonate ion must be converted to carbonic acid by gaining a hydrogen ion. When the hydrogen is added, it becomes H2CO3. Now it doesn't have a charge anymore. This new molecule quickly falls apart to H2O and CO2. And at that point, that second or two that it's in the capillary right there at the lungs, the CO2 diffuses out into the air because it's in high concentration in the blood, low concentration in the air, so it jumps out right then and there. Control of respiration. The neural respiration, the brain controls the diaphragm and the intercostals. The brain centers that are involved. Now you can, breathing's a funny thing. You can think about it or not think about it, and both jobs get done equally well. The brain centers involved are the medulla and the pons, and you have no conscious control over those. When you're falling asleep, those are the ones that keep you going through the night. Third bullet, the medulla contains the self-exciting inspiratory center. So it has a action potential that's automatically made to keep you breathing while you're asleep. And then the pons, which is that thing that looked like an Easter egg, the pons smooths out the stimulus. When the medulla comes up with an impulse to breathe, it's kind of just an impulse, just to suck in air, but the pons turns it into a smooth series of contractions so that we breathe gently in and out. Bronchioles, the tiniest tubes, and the alveoli have stretch receptors that indicate the degree of inflation, so or degree of stretch. So when you're sleeping, you're inhaling until the stretch receptors start to say, "Okay, we've got enough air," and then it shuts off the impulse to breathe in, and then you exhale because exhaling doesn't require a muscular contraction normally. Next word, vagus nerve. We've heard of that before. The vagus nerve tells of this inflation, and the medulla stops its signal, as I was saying. And in another tragic thing having to do with our old friend alcohol, medullary receptors are suppressed by too much alcohol, and breathing stops. And you've heard of this before from those kids that make that enormous mistake to drink rapidly, shots of alcohol, and what would happen normally is you would just throw up when your alcohol level got too high, but since you did them rapidly before you had a chance to respond that way, you pass out and then your medulla basically falls asleep. And it's a tragedy. It happens every year across the country, so it's something worth avoiding at all costs. Non-neural factors. There are some physical factors: talking, coughing, exercising. Next bullet, fever increases breathing rate. So, you got a fire to stoke, so you're going to be breathing quicker during fever. Volition, which is a fancy word for conscious control. You can decide on your breathing rate. It's really hard to do. I think if someone offered you $1 million, if you could make sure you breathed, oh, I don't know, 12 times a minute exactly for a day, I don't think anyone could continually think about it that much. It's we have the power to override. And you're a little kid and you're all angry at your parents. You can try to hold your breath, but this is a contest you're going to lose. Breathing centers will override our wishes if oxygen or carbon dioxide levels get too extreme. On the next page, there's emotional factors that affect our breathing. And you'll have to ask yourself, have you ever experienced these? I've experienced most of them, I think. Holding breath when scared is the first bullet. Like sometimes you are so scared you literally can't breathe. And I have definitely been there before for a time or two. Second one, this is the movie theater one, gasping when startled. That's the one where you throw popcorn in the air when the guy comes out of the closet and all that stuff. That's a obviously a breath of air that you weren't planning on. Number three, breathing fast when excited. You're 16 years old, you open up a small box on your birthday, and there's a car key in it. And you just start breathing all crazy fast because you realize that there's a brand new Porsche sitting out in the driveway for you, or maybe a Ferrari or something. Kids are special. Fourth bullet, all of these are controlled by the hypothalamus, which is part of that emotional center. Chemical factors. Primarily, carbon dioxide and oxygen are being measured in different parts of your body, and that tells you what your breathing rate should be also. Decreased pH and increased carbon dioxide will cause you to increase your breathing rate as measured by the medulla. So, if you're exercising, your CO2 level and your blood pH are going to drop, your CO2 level is going to go up. And that's going to stimulate you to take real big, deep breaths. If your breathing is real small, like if if you're sitting in a classroom, you're barely, you're taking notes or something like that, and you're barely breathing, low oxygen can actually be detected by peripheral chemoreceptors in the aorta. So that big old blood vessel coming right out of the heart should have the most oxygenated blood in your body. You actually have oxygen sensors there saying, hey, we don't have enough. And that may be something that causes you to yawn or something, which is taking a deep breath. Again, those receptors in the aorta give their signal to the medulla when they're very, very low, when oxygen is low. For the final section of our notes, there's a variety of disease conditions and things like that that I want you to take the time to look up. Again, if you just go to a WebMD or Mayo Clinic, those are good sites for getting general information about all these things. Give me an example of one though I wrote down because I want you to have some depth to your answers. I don't want a single like four words for an answer and say that's it. The one I gave was carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, you guys, everyone knows what carbon dioxide is. It's a carbon with two oxygens, but you also can have a carbon with one oxygen, carbon monoxide. And as I wrote in the example, carbon monoxide is an odorless, colorless gas that's fatal when breathed in big enough amounts. It is more attractive to Hb, to hemoglobin, than oxygen is. So if you have oxygen going in and carbon monoxide, the hemoglobin's like, whoa, I really like this carbon monoxide. So it bonds with it and it doesn't let it go. So, as the rest of my definition says, all the hemoglobin in your body, in your blood, becomes loaded with carbon monoxide. So, what you lack of is or what you die from is a lack of oxygen in your tissues. And if you have, like, this happens back east, you hear about it more than out here. If you have gas furnaces that are not properly burning, or if they're not properly vented, that carbon monoxide can leak into the house. And you go to sleep, and you'll read situations where the whole family will die from this in the middle of the night. So just like you have fire detectors, you can also get carbon monoxide detectors. And if you have gas in the house, you should have carbon monoxide testers. Most RVs have them because they have gas furnaces and things like that. But so that's my answer for carbon monoxide poisoning. There's I don't know, five, six, seven more that I want you to look up on your own. I will post my definitions for these after the assignment's due in case you want to see if you got them right. But that part I want you just to use your computer to get good definitions for. All right, so that's it for the respiratory system.